Welcome to Latte with a Lawyer, a podcast dedicated to bringing you the stories of some of America's most successful lawyers, figuring out what makes them tick, how they creatively solve problems, and how others aspiring to be them can follow in their footsteps.
Okay, folks, welcome to another episode of Latte with a Lawyer. I'm your host, Jonathan Brickman. And it's afternoon. We got Jack Cook from Morgan & Morgan. Welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for having me here.
Absolutely. Good deal. Latte with a Lawyer. So we got to start with your beverage of choice to get started in the morning. What gets you going?
I'm that kind of everyone around me sort of knows I'm that one cup of coffee guy. It's that perfect one. If it goes to two, then there's going to be some problems. So I just needed to get me up to that baseline bit of energy. But I actually really enjoy chock full of nuts. That's my coffee of choice. If people don't know that coffee chock full of nuts, it doesn't have nuts in it. So, that's the thing. It's called chock full of nuts because it was born on a guy that sold coffee and he had a nut cart. But the big thing was the nuts, not the coffee. But everyone loved the coffee so much, he stopped selling the nuts, but never changed the name. But I found out that so many people don't drink it because they think, oh, it has nuts in it. I have a nut allergy. It's never had nuts in it. But it is called chock full of nuts. And it's pretty good.
I have heard of it, by the way, but I have never consumed it. Basically, I drink whatever my wife buys at Publix. So
there you go.
I'm good with that. Anyway, so listen, I know you're a... You focus mainly on MedMal and you're at Morgan & Morgan. So you guys are obviously the largest personal injury firm. But tell everybody about what your particular practice is and focus.
So I do medical malpractice exclusively. Okay. The largest portion of my book of business, I am the managing a partner of our law firm's birth injury and birth trauma department.
Okay.
So I would say about 80% of my caseload is brain damage baby cases, brachial plexus injuries that happen at birth, hip dysplasias, stillbirths, ones where children are born in some compromised position. So it's a lot of that. And the other 20% just run-of-the-mill medical malpractice, wrongful death. A lot of it is surgical error, misdiagnosed cancer, missed infections, stuff like that.
Okay. So how did you land on that as a focus?
It's really interesting. I kind of always tell people that I'm just doing this to appease my Jewish mother who really wanted me to be a doctor. So I say, hey, mom, I'm not a doctor, but I'm out there, doing medical malpractice. But so it was actually kind of interesting how it happened because I came into the industry doing more auto and PI. And when I got to start practicing on my own, a doctor came up to me at one point who was a doctor who was, someone that I knew had seen clients of mine and said, I just got this notice of intent and I don't carry liability insurance. Can you do something about this? And I said, heck, I'm a brand new lawyer. I've got a Westlaw account. So yeah, I'm all over this. Was able to look it up. I had known a little bit about MedMal before, called some other lawyers, but basically was able to take on the case and get the guy out of the case. Well, a co-defendant in that case was like, well, you got that guy out. Well, we want you to come in and help the lawyers get this guy out. And that turned into me doing MedMal defense as a full-time sort of thing. And I just got immersed in the medicine and the healthcare and the healthcare industry part of it. But my plaintiff roots kind of brought me back to the plaintiff side. Although throughout my career, I've bounced back sometimes and done a little bit of the defense. Frankly, if it was the setup, I could do both of those. I think in our world, in the medical malpractice world, we consider ourselves a part of the risk management of healthcare. They identify mistakes. We identify mistakes. We just, bring the civil lawsuits behind them that get the victims taken care of, where they're doing it more from a regulatory standpoint, but we both kind of serve the same monster. So I do it because I love healthcare. And I think that our doctors and nurses, especially in my town, they've got good hospitals here, good doctors, good nurses, good healthcare. Our country's got great healthcare. And I think it's important to make sure that stays consistent. So that's why it's my passion, and the birth injury stuff's just my absolute baby, because doing a couple birth injury cases early off really, really put me close in with those cases, as you know, those turn into pretty serious problems for people when they're in their young 20s delivering a first baby, and now they're told that you've got to take care of a brain damaged baby for the rest of their life. So
yeah.
It's a tough lot.
Yeah, it raised a lot of other issues around that too, right? But wait, so have you always been with Morgan & Morgan, or were you at another firm before that?
So when I'm from Florida originally. I was in the Marine Corps. And then when I got out of the service, I came back down to Florida, started working as a school teacher. And I started dating a girl that I knew from high school who worked here at Morgan, Colling & Gilbert. And she was a case manager, personal injury case manager. And I was a teacher and a coach. So I had my summers off. So an attorney who she had just started to do some work for said, "Hey, I might be running some ads and doing some commercials. So, you know, do you want to come on board my staff?" I went out and did one of these signups where I signed, you know, and I kind of had some, my notions of what my now wife was doing for a living.
Yeah.
I thought that this is ambulance chasing. I really didn't have a good sense of it. Then I signed on as an investigator. I go out within my first day. I come home the other day after signing three of these auto accident victims. And I say to my wife, "I'm done teaching. I'm going to law school."
Wow.
And she said, "Really?" I said, "Yeah." I said, and that's exactly what happened. I stopped teaching, enrolled in law school at nights, worked here at the firm full time during the day. When I became an attorney, I left here and I didn't come back here until just 5 years ago. So I spent the first good almost 10 years of my career away from here. I litigated some cases against some of these attorneys. We've always been close. We've always been tight. My wife continued to work here. John Morgan's always been a very close personal friend of mine and family friend, because my family owns a magic shop, or did own a magic shop, and he's actually a very big time professional and amateur magician and hobbyist. So he's pretty big in the magic world as well as legal world as well. Yeah, he has a couple of venues that he's helped run, like Magical Midway. His Wonderworks has a great magic show, but his knowledge of magic and the people that he knows in the magic world, like they're the heavyweights, like the Lance Burtons and whatnot. So we've always had that connection with the magic. And so that's what brought me, and really what brought me back to Morgan & Morgan was, you know, when this firm was really starting to get at its period of exponential growth, the opportunity to use those resources to build and develop what's emerging into one of the largest birth injury and birth trauma practices, that was the lure for me. Because again, these are big cases. You're up against the elements. You're up against deep pocketed hospitals and insurance companies.
Yeah.
And it's an arms race and an all out war. But with our resources, we're able to look at more cases, take on more of these cases, and really put the fight behind them. So I really throw a lot of kudos to the Morgan family for kind of believing in that and helping me, you know, get over here to get that started 5 years ago.
Oh, interesting. Interesting story. Yeah. So I'm asking a couple questions. First, actually, you probably don't know this, but we spent a couple hours with John in the office a few months ago, and it was pretty entertaining. He's an entertaining fella.
He's a character. you know what's great about John is, I've always said this about John, it's like for me it's like one of those things that you just see a person out there in the business world doing that you're like, I've got to get that in my toolbox. And John, of course, you know, goes places, especially around here in Orlando, Central Florida. He's a very popular character, but he has this talent for when he's talking to you, it's like you're the only two people on the planet having that conversation. It's always very topical and relevant. He loves to bring people together. So he's probably going to also mention a few other names of people that you really should get together with. And you probably end up with a text or an email saying, here's that person's contact. But he's just got this uncanny talent that I've seen him maybe work a room with 100 people, maybe even more, come up to him. But every single one of them is having one of these one-on-one, only you and me conversations. And it's a talent to be able to do that.
Because
it always feels very personal, no matter who's in front of him. You really feel like I'm getting a good chunk of his quality time here, you know?
Yes, absolutely. That is a talent. And you're right. There's a certain breed that does that well. And those are the people that rise to the top. It's funny, you know, I'm from New England. I'm from outside of Boston. And, you know, when you travel around the country, I mean, you know, because of the roots in Florida, when I go there and I see him and say, I wonder how that plays with the Boston culture, right? It's very different, right? Or New York.
Yeah. I mean, that's so interesting because I'm from Philly originally. My wife's from the Boston area. She's from her whole family's Southborough and Framingham, and dad's from Worcester. And so big New England family. So, you know, when we first got together, there was the big Philly-Boston rivalry, especially with the hockey, with the Flyers and the Bruins.
Sure.
My parents were huge Bruins fans. And they were there in the thick of it in the 70s with Bobby Clark and Bobby Orr. And then there was the Red Sox, and it was the Phillies and whatnot. And then the Sixers and even the Celtics got competitive. So it's always been like that. And, you know, John has now expanded, you know, both in the Boston area where we're partnered up with the Red Sox,
right,
but also in the Philadelphia area where his, you know, is whatnot and where those ads are hitting. And it's interesting because it's like in both those areas, Boston and Philly, you know, our presence there and our growth there, yeah, obviously put a lot of focus on John. And when they, you know, there's a couple of interviews where they got to talking to John just about, and it's just, it's very just fascinating to hear that being in those areas for us is about just recognizing also that you get into these areas where you're like, these are good communities. These are good people. What matters more to a trial lawyer than knowing that the people who are going to make decisions on your case are the type that are good people who value safety, who are fair. You know, and you see that in those areas, and you see an emergence of it in those areas. And it's one of those things where even as trial lawyers, I feel like we probably get a glimpse of how people agree more with each other now than they're like disagreeing. We know that there's a lot of people making us think that, hey, we're worlds apart from each other, even localized, we're worlds apart from each other. But the truth of the matter is we all know we have a lot more in common. And as trial lawyers, we get to talk to those juries. We get to see it. We get to see the people agreeing with each other, and we get to see the people that have those same things. And look, you can't get to a verdict without getting those people to agree to a set of very controversial facts so they can make those decisions.
Yeah.
So every verdict is where we have gotten people to agree on very heavily disputed facts. Each one of them is like a modern miracle to me that that happens. And I think that our industry doesn't get a lot of credit for that because we're adversarial. But even at a mediation this week, I'm like, who else is bringing people together that are this pitted against each other? And by the end of a single day, walking away with a resolution, nobody's right. Doing that.
Yeah, that's true. So take me through the background. So you were, I saw in your background, you were a Marine. So bring me through that whole journey, like from where you got started, like to become a Marine. And then, and you told me why you went to law school, but tell me how you got started.
Well, I think the beginning of it all kind of, when I was 16 years old, I was a senior in high school. I had skipped two grades because I had grown up kind of in the magic shop and doing a lot of traveling around. It was a lot easier to do that back in the day. We didn't have as much standardized testing. When I did settle down and test, it was like I could be at these levels. And my parents just said, put them up at the highest one, because really the plan was for me to graduate and then just continue working and taking over their store. 16 years old, I got bad in a car accident. I wrecked my truck. It was only a few months old, was a used truck, but my sister was in the car. I was totally freaked out and my car was totaled. I hit a tree and my dad came and I thought I was going to kill me, but no, he put his arms around me and said, that's what matters to me. So I feel like, okay, great. Lesson learned. No one's dead. And all of a sudden the cop walks up and gives me a ticket for careless driving. I was like, are you kidding me? And like, you know, this was a young guy, but certainly careless driving, you know, me versus a tree. So I go out the next day, I take the measurements, I take photographs, you know, and this is back when you had to take the photographs and actually take them to the booth and have them developed, you know, so there's effort here. And I put together one of these little try boards and I show up to the hearing where they call my number, you know, and with a bunch of other traffic court. And I go up there with my little suit that I bought for graduation that year and put up a little try board. And I walked the judge through the whole case about how there was a log or a railroad tie that went around the embankment, jutted out in the middle of the road. My truck had hit it, but if that wasn't there, I would have never hit it. And I would have been around that embankment just fine. So I go on for about 20 minutes of this. And the judge literally looks over to me and says, yeah, Mr. Cook, my question was, would you like to plead guilty, not guilty, or plead no contest? He said, this is the arraignment, whether or not you either just say I'm guilty, I want to pay the court costs, I'm not guilty, and I want a trial date, which I'll set for you, or no contest, which is like, hey, judge, I'm going to tell you some stuff and let you make up your mind. So he's like, so let me help you. Your plea is no contest. I accept it. It's dismissed. Pay the court costs. and he says me out the door. And the last, you know, and he said, has anyone ever told you that you should be a lawyer? And I said, sir, people have been telling me that since I was a little kid, but I have never considered it to be a compliment.
That's but pretty funny.
It put the seed in me. And then I graduated high school. I embarked on a theater kind of collegiate career for a little bit, tried to make it musical theater. I was a singer. I did theater. But it just didn't pan out for me. So I ended up enlisting and joining in the Marines. It's, you know, it was very something that was rooted with me in my patriotism. And the Marines was the greatest time I've ever spent in my entire life. There's nothing that will ever compare to it. There's never people that I will deal with or be close with or next to that hold a candle to the people I did back then. And just getting in and out of that situation and being here in the life I live today, it's like a bonus to me.
So tell me about that. I mean, what was... Why did that have such a profound impact
on life, you know, during that period of time? So I go in 96, and I'm until about 2002. I was on my way back to the States when 9/11 hit. So I had to, you know, I was over in Spain at the time. So had to sort of, you know, put things on hold with getting out for a little bit, extended my contract. And then when I did eventually get out, I went back to school. You know, I already had a bunch of college done. And that's where I got a degree in history, moved back down to Florida and started working as a school teacher, led me to meeting my wife. That got me into the law school. And then when I graduated law school, you know, there was at the time, there wasn't a lot of jobs out there for lawyers. We were kind of in the recession, you know, the beginning parts of it. But there was a lot of work still, you know, because in those recessions, as I've come to learn, claims sometimes go up because people that may not have brought a claim before, people that might have said, I can't use that little extra bit of coin, all of a sudden we're saying, well, maybe I can't. Maybe I do need to have that by an attorney. So I threw up my own shingle, you know, started handling my own cases. But after that little medical malpractice thing early, I got scooped up by a med mal defense firm. Then went to work of counsel for some great lawyers where we did birth injury work all over the nation and kind of mastered, you know, all of that. I was over with Dan Newland's office for a little bit, who's our other big personal injury attorney here in town. He used to actually be with John, but then broke apart. So I worked with Dan for a very little bit, got a call from these guys one day saying, Jack, we love you. We miss you, you know, and we just can't see a logical reason why you're not over here. And you know, I've always loved these guys and the prospect of coming over here to do MedMal with these lawyers, but also to get that birth injury department developed and built just, you know, brought me over. And it's been an amazing 5 years since. I've got a great team of people, lawyers, paralegals, some nurses, nurse consultants, and just a great, great team of people with a common purpose and a common mission. And I really couldn't be prouder because I've always considered myself to be like an anti-lawyer, like kind of an, you know, came into this industry after, you know, a couple different other industries, and growth has never been something that I've ever seen be comfortable with the quality of representation. There's always that fear and concern that these big juggernaut firms can absolutely turn into these conveyor belt type mills. I got to say, I'm so amazed at what this law firm has been able to do, so much so it's the only place I ever have been or considered and am a partner. I partnered up with this place because I believe wholeheartedly in their mission and the people that are standing side by side doing it. And just an operation that's just led from the front by the Morgan family. I mean, these guys are just, they're present daily grinders. I mean, right next to you trying cases. That's, you know, like anyone that goes to war and goes to battle knows when it's the kings and the princes and the lords fighting shoulder to shoulder with you, you got that extra pep in your step.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So you think your experience in the Marines sort of is played out a little bit with Morgan? It sounds like you get that group camaraderie, the leadership skills, all that kind of stuff. I'm hearing some of that, right?
No. Yeah. It's interesting, you know, how that all folds in and plays because, you know, and I kind of tell this to my crew sometimes.
Yeah.
We always talk about the way I run my things is a little bit like a pirate ship, you know, and, you know, and there's a mutual respect. So it's kind of like, you know, you've got these rogues and vagabonds and whatnot, but we've got the rules and how to play the game. We're going to play it hard, but we're going to make sure we're playing it right, sort of thing. But it really is that sense of, and of course, any lawyer that goes to trial, I mean, we don't want to be there in trial. I mean, that's our client that could have a guaranteed result, who's now sitting there with a question mark on their case, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, nobody sat in law school dreaming about, man, I just can't, I'm envisioning me banking that settlement check. I'm envisioning me getting that great reduction on that lien, right? No, you envision yourself in a courtroom standing and delivering. That's what brought you there. And that's what you dreamed of. So if that still is in your belly, then you're destined to be that trial lawyer. And like I tell them, you got to love it. You've got to love it. But it's just like being downrange. I was with a bunch of Marines. They were nuts. They were crazy. That's our moniker. They acted like they wanted to be there. We acted like that we wanted nothing more than to be at the tippiest part of the tip of the spear. First guy out of the boat, first guy out of the ELO. That's what we wanted to do, right? But secretly, in our heart of hearts, it became very simplistic as a mission. Just get the guys next to me home. That's it. Let's just get this guy home and this guy home. And if they do their job and I do mine, we all go home. And that's the mentality that they have. So that's what we try to do with our attorneys here. It doesn't compare anywhere in that we're not in a life and death world. Some of our clients are.
Yeah.
But the sense of, we're going to be trying cases. Because that's what this calls for sometimes. And you have got to be someone that embraces the suck. You've got to be someone that says, there's no other place I'd rather be in the world than in this courtroom standing in between these defendants and this injured person right here. Because that's what they dreamed of. So I love that we're cultivating that. We're giving these lawyers here so much confidence to go out that door. You know, fear is it's something that in our industry, it can totally freeze you in your tracks. You want to be cautious. You want to be concerned, but fear shouldn't be what it is. And I'm very proud of the fact that we send lawyers, even young lawyers, out the door every day, fearlessly into those courtrooms to go and argue their case and give it their best and respect the result, regardless of what it is.
Yeah, that's great. It's funny. I used to say to, you know, over the years running a large sales organization, I used to tell the salespeople, if you don't think you're going to come up with a deal, don't even go into the room. Don't take the meeting.
Right.
Same kind of philosophy. Like, don't even go there because they'll see it. So how do you build that culture? How do you permeate that through the firm?
Well, I think it definitely starts with, they have to hear it from the top, right? So they've got to hear it from the very, very top, because at the end of the day, you know, and you know, hopefully he doesn't listen to this and take this as a slight to anything other. But the old saying is, you know, where does the 3,000-pound canary sleep? Anywhere it wants to, you know. And that's the point. Unless it's ductus exemplo, you know, that Latin phrase of leading by example. Unless they're getting it from the top. And I'm not just saying the only person sitting on the top. But yes, you need that person. You need the cherry. You need the king. You need it to trickle down and just be this thing that goes all the way up, so that nobody is left wondering, is there somebody that's looking in on me that is saying, hey, I'm really going to be sitting here with a scorecard and seeing how this person's going to be doing out the door? Because even that flash in their mind, that moment of hesitation, is not what they're going to need. Like that boxer that's in there that doesn't let go of that right hand because he hesitates and misses their window. So we want to give them that encouragement. The second thing is making sure that they have the resources and the support. You know, so it's messaging, it's resources, it's support, and it's philosophical. And then the last component to it, and this is one where people like Keith Mitnick, you know, who I know has been on here before, fold into this. We've got some of the best trial lawyers in the country, and they are here. And they're not just here huddled in their office handling their cases. They have office hours. They hold clinics. They invite anyone on any case to come sit in and say, how can I help you win your case? And they deploy all over the country. They will come and help you carry your briefcase and order lunch. We will do that, you know, and we will also come there and help pick a jury. We'll do whatever it is we need to do on that trial day because it's game day. But to have those trial lawyers that are there and available resources and knowing I can go ping a Keith Mitnick, I can go talk to a Xander Clem, you know, to a Rick Block and get their thoughts on my little case over here, because they know that these are people that are never going to say that's a little case. Because it's a personal injury and there's a person at the end of it. And to that person, I can promise you it's not little. And to be able to give them all of that, combined with the resources and that trickle down message, that's where the synergy is really coming into play, in my opinion. But without that coming from the very top and it being not platitudes and cliches,
yeah,
it being the, hey, here's your spear, here's your shield, come home with your shield or on it. But either way, you're the sung hero. Right. Think about the old Spartans. Think about them. That's why that was embedded in those soldiers, to know that I get the glory, win or lose, means we're going to go out there and fight ferociously. Of course.
You get a lot of passion. So aside from that, which clearly helps, I mean, what do you think of the skills that make somebody really good at being a trial attorney?
I really think that one of the main keys, it's not just about delivery and polish. That's always very, very good. But you've got to just be able to pivot and adapt and adjust on your feet.
Mm.
The most important, in my opinion, people always say that picking a jury is the most important part of trial. And I do think that's important. But I'm not one of these people. Maybe it's my own stubbornness that thinks, even when I get that bad juror on, that he's unconvincible. I still think I can convince them, and I think I have in certain instances.
Yep.
But redirect. Redirect. So you put on your witness, which is that wall that you just built. Then they come up and cross-examine and blow those big holes in the wall. Your ability to get back up there with your bricks and mortar and patch those holes up is what wins or loses your cases. But guess what? You don't get to plan your redirect.
Right.
You can anticipate what their cross is going to be. You can guess what their cross is going to be. But in reality, it's going to happen in front of you in real time and have you have to go back up there and do that very important job. If you can't work on your feet, if you can't adjust on your feet to do that, then it's going to be very, very hard to win difficult cases where they're going to blow those holes.
So how do you?
And so I think the number one skill for that I see is the ability to think on your feet.
Yeah. And how do you get that? I mean, how do you, number one, vet that people actually have that skill set so they'll be able to do that? Or can you train somebody to be like, to have those skills?
It's debatable. I think that you need to have a little bit of the core of the intangibles of that. You know, you definitely, and that comes with the ability to publicly speak, the ability to, you know, get up there and ask intelligible questions and whatnot. Now, the actual framing of questions, that's experience, that's time, that's just listening to 1,000 different depots and cross examinations, reading books, picking up tips from other people about how to frame certain things. What I do for my staff is everything's always a test. And I always have this little quip that I go around and say, people, and it's that I've never met a good trial lawyer who couldn't tell a joke. And that's the truth, because it's storytelling. Some people tell jokes, they paint vivid pictures, they're like, you're in it. Even if it's a long joke, doesn't seem like a long joke, you're in it. They're painting the picture, you're there, timing is there, punchline is there. So I put my lawyers on the spot all the time, and I'll just pick up a topic out of anywhere and say, tell me a joke about this. And a lot of it's also just sitting around round tabling and diarying cases. We're diarying cases, we're talking about cases, and I have a concept or this idea, I float it out there, and well, so let me ask you something. The defense is going to get up and they're going to argue this right here. What do we say to that? And I look around the room, and there you got it. I already got a competition brewed. I've got three lawyers in the room. One of them wants to step up. They do this in medicine. This is rounds. This is grand rounds, right?
Right, yeah.
So I borrow a lot from medicine in this by saying, hey, instead of me telling you that this is an aortic dissection, you tell me what you think and what's the evidence that it's aortic dissection. And oh, by the way, what if I throw this other factor in there? So bringing that Socratic method into that day-to-day is important. But another thing that is the from the beginning is the recognition and the realization that, yes, you can teach these young lawyers. You can mentor them. You can train them. It is a trainable thing to do this, but it only happens by them either being in trial with you or you doing what I just said, developing ways. You can't just say, hey, let me throw you into trial. Here's a witness. And then when they get up there and it sounds all wonky and everything, you're on their case like, hey, I thought you were a trial lawyer. No, you step them up in increments of that. And that's one of the great things about a firm this size, too. We have those different tiers of first year associates. We've got like 5 year associates, got some 10 years and, you know, and working your way all the way up. And there's opportunity for a lot of these people to jump into trial. So we bring 2-3 lawyers to trial. And if you come to trial with me, you're working. You're not there. You're going to be questioning witnesses. You're going to be doing some substantial things, especially if it's your case you've been working on. So.
But you, so you must lose. I mean, again, sounds like the standards are pretty high and you expect a lot. And you're, you know, just by the way you're describing that environment, you must lose people along the way, right? They can't cut it, right?
Really, it's we try to do a very good job of selection in the beginning. And another good benefit of having the multiple practice areas that we do in is some young lawyers just need to try on different areas of law and they get that opportunity here sometimes. Some of them, we have lawyers here that are very passionate wage, hour, and employment and labor law people.
Yeah,
that's their niche. Some of them didn't come here to do that though, but said, hey, let's try that hat on. And the next thing you know, or you know, Social Security, work comp, you know, you name it, for, you know, first party. So it what we try to do is try to bring these people in and really put them through a structured kind of training, development and mentorship type of program where we're always pushing their development. But I kind of like if it's a young lawyer, I always say that this is akin to like if they're coming to us as a first year, like right out of law school. This is like their residency. So if they graduated med school, they do a residency and that's, hey, we know you all know it in practicum or you know it on paper. Let's teach to you in practicum. That's what that first couple of years is going to be. Associates that come to us 3 to 5 years, they're actually getting more of a fellowship in trial law where we're going to push them a little further. We expect more than those 1 to 3 year associates, but we push their development even further in what we expect them to do, even so far as, like, I've got associates handling some cases. They work with me on catastrophic brain damage cases, but it might be like a stillbirth case, you know, with a very easy and understandable theory of liability. Well, I want them to run point on that case. I want them to be the ones to pick the experts. I want them to call those experts. I want them to do every aspect of that under my supervision so that they're getting the sense of how to do it on that micro level. But it's the legal industry and there's always turnover.
Yeah.
And with lawyers that come in here and put in the work and put in the time and take what we teach them and go else places, we're okay with that. We really are. I mean, if they are a lawyer that we really want to keep, they've put the blue chip out there like any other law firm that has a cadre of associates, then we're going to sit that associate down and make it worth their while to stay. You know, absolutely. And the best thing about it is, We got a lot of youth injected in the leadership in this firm. So just like in baseball, some rookie can come in here and hit 60 home runs and smoke everyone here. And they're going to be recognized and rewarded for that because that's someone that's just in here doing it with talent. And we recognize that. We cultivate that. We've had a couple lawyers come in here right out of law school in a short amount of time who have gotten themselves into prominent positions of leadership here and are handling a good cadre of cases and everything. And again, hats off to a firm this size that doesn't just say, hey, let's just look and see how long everyone's been here. It's like, where's the talent? Where's the passion? And, you know, where can we put people in the best possible place to succeed here? Because by them doing great, our clients do great. And at the end of the day, that's kind of what, if you say that there's one thing that we kind of insist upon, it's that understanding that you got to treat every client like family, okay? And that is a loaded kind of comment because you fight with family, right. You butt heads with family, with the understanding and the recognition that it's never that we come out the other side of it together. But also, at some point in time, you're going to have to tell this person that this is the appropriate amount of compensation for this case. If that's what you would tell your mother, knowing that you're going to see her at Thanksgiving and Christmas and Easter and Passover and Hanukkah, and you're going to have to look her in the eye, then you can go ahead and tell the client that that's the appropriate thing to do. But if you wouldn't tell your mother that, be comfortable sitting across from her, then don't do that with the client. And everyone has accepted that and has wrapped their arms around that. And it's really, really cool. It is a very cool thing to see that people embrace that, because at its root, as difficult as this stuff is, I can't imagine anybody who would do it who didn't have that part of it latched to them. There's other areas of law, certainly, you can do that antiseptically, but I don't think it's this, because if you don't have that empathy factor in there, then you're never going to recognize what is that appropriate level of whatever it is those people are seeking, from money to closure. And that's the Med-Mal stuff. I've never represented a single client who wouldn't gladly give back every penny I've won for them to have their life back, or their leg back, or their baby back, or the ability to walk or whatnot. So it's rewarding stuff.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, it's interesting to hear the way you speak. I mean, you're an atypical personal injury firm, because you're huge, right? I mean, you're running it like a big enterprise business. So you got to have a lot of human capital, a lot of resources to support people. And again, as you said, put them in the right seat, you know, help them sort of find the right place. I mean, yeah, it's different than most firms, right? Very different.
Yeah, it's really, again, it's so cool to see. I really think that it's coming at a time where we're seeing kind of a global modernization of the legal industry. And I think a lot of that was even kicked forward by COVID and the lockdowns. Yeah. I think that our industry realized how efficient we can be remotely, when even before there were judges that were refusing to hold a telephonic or a video conference hearing. I've had to get in my car as early as a year or two ago and drive down to Miami for a 15-minute hearing that the judge wants me there in person, 4 hours down, 4 hours back, 8 hours of travel billed to the client, not by the hour, but obviously the mileage. You know, when I was doing defense, though, that was a great day for me. That was a 10-hour billing day for a 15-minute hearing that lasted 5 minutes. And I think even the judges are realizing now, hey, I don't have to have all these lawyers hanging around my chambers now in the hallway. I can keep these guys on this video docket and keep things nice and tight. I know that they're happy with that mute button they get to hit. They're the host. I've seen a couple lawyers get cut off before. I'm like, that's my goal on these Zoom hearings. I don't ever want to have a judge hit the gong button on me, mute me in the middle of talking, put me in the box.
Oh, man. Well, listen, I went to Miami the last couple of days for that NTL event. I live in Delray Beach. Took 2 hours each way. It's a waste of time.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
So you come from Orlando, add another 2 to 3, depending how fast you drive.
Yeah, you know, the turnpike. Yeah. And so, you know, and being able to do a lot of those things telephonically now, via teleconference, you know, so it really kind of just, you know, thrust this industry a little bit into the future. Like, even as far as when we revamped and redesigned our offices, it's like, gone are the bookshelves with all the old legal reporters on them and all the wood in the conference rooms and everything. It's just more streamlined. It's just a little bit more efficient and modernized. And things like we have a client portal, which allows our clients to kind of follow and track their case. Mm. You know, we've got, you know, different things that we use to keep our clients connected with us. And we also, you know, have put a lot of emphasis into the quality of life of our attorneys, paralegals, employees, and staff. Again, this is heavy stuff.
Yeah.
So we make sure that everyone's getting that routine, you know, check up from the neck up on all things and have that balance. Cause you know, just like on an airplane put the oxygen on yourself for other people, it happens to us all. We run ourselves rampant sometimes being out there, understanding we've got this duty that's pulling us, but not realizing that, you know, we're getting too tired and too sick and too run down And we don't want anything at all to ever impact the quality of representation that we can provide. And again, that again is the benefit of having the team that we do, the coverages that we do, cross coverages that we do, multiple attorneys on cases. Clients are almost overwhelmed sometimes by how many attorneys they hear from on these cases. And that's kind of the point. I tell them, I said, these clients should know that when they get on the phone with you as a lawyer, be prepared to talk for a long time about your case, because right. that's what we like to do. Talk about your case. And we want our clients to be active participants in helping us win the case. And they often have, I mean, they're the ones that have all the facts. So, you know, they're the ones that sometimes can put it out there on the table in a format that's like, that's the winning argument.
Yeah. Well, and unlike a corporate firm or defense, I mean, they're not paying for more lawyers to be on the phone, right? Because it's contingency.
It's funny. And anyone that is in a situation, over the years, you know, people, like you say, people come in and out of firms, people move, cases transfer. We develop new ways of doing things. And yes, it sometimes comes along, and you deal with it, that you pick up a case that someone else picked up before, and you're getting in the file and you're reaching out. And sometimes someone hears and they say, oh my God, you're my third lawyer on this case. You're the fourth lawyer I've heard. I heard from a lawyer. And whenever I hear it as a complaint, the first thing I write back to them is I say, yeah, impressive, right? You know? Right. I said, yeah. I said, impressive, right? I said, there's an army of lawyers against you. You have an army of lawyers for you. And I'm always going to make sure we got one more lawyer than they do. And that's the kind of quippy thing I always say. But I say, look, just understand one thing, that's just the way that we handle things. And as attorneys, we have the absolute ability to jump in and pick up a case and wrap ourselves around the facts of the case. I'm the new attorney in on the case. I know the case back, forth, left, right, and sideways. Which is another good tip. I mean, don't ever call that new client without having your familiarity of the case. Because the first thing they're going to want to ask you is all these questions. And how it's like, well, I haven't gotten into the case yet. Right off the bat, there's a lack of confidence. As opposed to, I've been through everything. Give them five of those facts that will have them convinced, yeah, he does know my case. And then, you know, you go ahead and you deal with that. But it's something that we continue to deal with as we grow and with size. And the one thing that we do just to make sure is always, always, always ensure that whatever system, button, bell, or whistle that's being put in place, that's not ever going to compromise the quality of the representation. We can try to move things faster. We can do things more efficiently. We can do a lot of different things. And we have a lot of different resources and tech, but never anything that would compromise the quality of that representation. And keeping those two things in tandem on the way up has been really awesome to watch and see and be a part of.
Yeah. Well, you got to be doing right. Cause I mean, that's one of the biggest problems as you get bigger to be able to keep all those good practices in place is not easy, right? That takes good management skills, systems, et cetera. So, and do you have a CRM to keep knowledge? Do you use Salesforce or something like that?
Yeah. So we work on Litify.
Oh, Litify.
Which is on the Salesforce platform.
Oh, okay. Got it.
And the great thing about Litify is that it's the most comprehensive, cloud-based, customizable case management progression software I've ever seen. Like, its ability also, because it's a Microsoft-based program and the software engineers who developed it, you know, they're like that, whatever allows them to code as well with Microsoft, is a lot of other people's apps, bells, whistles can fold into it, you know, easily. So for example, we've got one push of a button request records. Like our paralegals don't send mail. They just hit buttons that get that mail. You just pick, I want this sent certified to this address. And they're not sitting there feeding green cards into printers and doing whatnot, you know? And the ability to really have that good sense of your inventory, how to track it. You got your client portal that you can put documents in that your clients can see. We use, you know, cloud-based programs that allow our clients to seamlessly send us photos, videos, documents that automatically upload. So the Salesforce and the Litify, it's amazing. It's great, great stuff. And I don't think that we can push it enough, develop it enough. I still think it's got miles and miles to go.
Okay.
But eventually is going to be something that lets everyone in this industry get a few more hours of sleep at night,
yeah,
take a few more deep breaths at night, knowing that what used to be in your filing cabinet is now like right here in front of your face in an organized way that you can literally in 5 minutes scroll through and get a glimpse of your entire inventory and what's going on with it. And that's so impressive to be able to do. And I just think we need to continue pushing it. We obviously do. We are always looking for ways to take things that have dots and removing as many as we can to make it more efficient.
Got it. And you know, people in your firm are leveraging our platform, by the way, for case prep and valuation. You know that, right?
That's right. That's great. Yeah.
So good. I'm
that's
good.
Great. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's exactly that type of synergy, you know, is what we're really pushing to try to find and see so that, you know, I think that's where, you know, one thing as a firm that we are striving to do better every single year, because you just realize this, all lawyers realize this, we're at our best when we can collaborate, right?
Yeah.
And that it's pretty impressive here. You could be in the middle of trial and you could say, help, exclamation point, and say, this is the issue. And within 5 minutes, you're going to get back about 50 emails from lawyers all around the country with orders and this and that. And I mean, things, it's such an impressive thing to see when it works and the collaboration. So, you know, we use things like Slack, we use things like Microsoft Teams, we use things where we can get together and collaborate on documents from our desks. We convert meetings to more of those, you know, collaborative projects, you know, more of that operations side of thing, rather than just saying, let's stick a lawyer in an office for 3 days and send them down their hole to solve this problem. It's probably something we can group up on, maybe even divide up portions on. So, you know, that degree of synergy and collaboration is promoted by all this technology that's coming in. And we're starting to see it extend to our vendors, which is great, because I really think it works best when you've got that set of devoted vendors. You get a little bit more of a loyalty there. You get a little bit more of a, hey, they anticipate us. And we know that things happen, things moving fast, you know, checks don't get sent out. And there's a little bit of flexibility there, knowing, hey, you know, these are our people. And there's a sense of reliable. But the real point of that is, bring about full circle, is that sometimes we have something that works really good for us, whether it's a vendor, whether it's the way that we focus group, whether it's an expert, but we keep it to ourselves. And it's not because we're being greedy and stingy. It's just that we assume that everyone's got their own little black book. Everyone's got their own little Rolodex and way of doing things. But my way might be better than yours, and your ways might be better than mine. So what we work to try to do, what we're working on better and better every year is trying to say, what can we put out there as a standard? What can we put out there research-wise, folders-wise, as to say that, hey, we have found the best way to do this, and this is the way we want everyone to kind of do it. And certainly, if anyone's got suggestions as to a more efficient way of doing it, anybody, pipe up and tell us what that is. Some of our greatest ideas have come right from the staff, the runners, you know, the lot, you know, people that you would, you know, down in the mailroom. They come up with things all the time, implemented as policy just because, yes, that was a four dot task that you've showed us a way to do it in two.
Yep.
Now we get that little extra time. We start adding in all that little extra time. We really want that extra time to be, we want it to be divided. Like that extra time gets you some extra time to look at some extra cases, but it also gets you some extra time on your own.
Yeah, there you go. Well, listen, I'm going to let you go. I mean, you could probably talk all day. I feel the enthusiasm. So, but we'll finish this off here. I appreciate it.
That's been great.
Yeah. I don't know if you want to leave any final words with the audience. Yeah, a lot of people are going to be listening to this. If you want to, otherwise we'll close it down.
No, I mean, just, you know, I think parting words on this is, you know, we as attorneys, this is such an interesting industry. You know, I've been fascinated by it since the moment I've been in it. I think very few people are in a job where there's people on the other side who are being paid a lot of money to see you fail, you know? And I think it takes a personality to do that. It takes a personality to do medical malpractice and this complex type of litigation. I mean, like I said, I can't give people what they really want. I can't have juries go back there and build a time machine and go back in time and stop that doctor or nurse or NP in the hall and say, hey, slow down, turn around and take another look. So the most we can ever get people is a silver medal. That's the most we can ever get them. So again, takes a personality for those people out there. So I have a profound respect for everyone in this industry. And it wouldn't have that if the people in this industry weren't doing the good work out there. And I just think that if you don't love trial, you need to learn to love trial. If you're that plaintiff's lawyer out there and, you know, at the end of the day, no matter where you're working, if you don't feel like that you have got that support, that you can take your own convictions and feelings and take any case you want to trial, any case that you feel that justice is deserved a trial, then you need to get out of that place because it's not why you dreamt of in law school. That would be a compromise of your own goals to believe in that much, but not be able to convey that enough that you're getting the green light to go do something about it. And there's plenty of places out there that give you those green lights. And so I like lawyers that like and embrace trial. It is not about being polished. It is not about being Billy Flynn and razzle dazzling them. It's not about any of that. It is about being confident in your case and belief in your client. And then you put it out there and you respect the result. And certainly, you know, we help anybody that wants to try cases from the plaintiff's side, because, you know, anyone that's doing that, that comes to our side. But anyone out there who is going into those trials doing that, you know, a lot of respect and kudos. It's not easy. And just, you know, hope everyone continues to grind on it, you know, as we collectively embrace the new legal landscape that we're seeing. So awesome stuff.
Good deal. All right, everybody. Thank you again. Jack Cook, Morgan & Morgan. And this is sponsored by Motion Track, which is a legal tech platform. We help litigators prepare for mediation trials with our Insights platform. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.